This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Unlock me! Unlock me!
I'm not going to swear, okay?
You know what I'm saying?
No.
It's Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Hey! We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Welcome in on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I get to be with you until 9 o'clock tonight, and if you'd like to be a part of the show, participate in, interact with me, you know I love it, 312-644-6767. That's the phone number. That is the way to text us as well if you'd like to do that, 312-644-6767, the way to interact with me and us here at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm looking at the guest list tonight, and I am pleased to see that for the second straight show in which I am hosting, we will have on the show tonight the voice of the Chicago Bulls. That is Chuck Swirsky. He will join us again at 7 o'clock tonight to talk about the Bulls. And, you know, well, I always like to talk to Joe Bag of Donuts, too, because, you know, we'll talk serious Bulls basketball, and Chuck's very serious about the Bulls. We know that. But when Joe Bag of Donuts shows up, man, it is on. And he probably will have opinions on the Cubs and the Sox and maybe with the Bears, because there is just a swirl of Bearsness going on. And you know I will cover that tonight, including Scott Bear, Bears insider for Marquee. Scott Bear has been at the owners' meetings, and he will join us tonight, 8 o'clock, to talk about the Chicago Bears. And I imagine that before 8 o'clock, I will have talked plenty of Chicago Bears as well, because we have got the time to do it. Cubs win. You just heard it. Cubs win. Double figures. Nice win. Clean win. Cubs 10. Oakland 2. Man, these two games, like, it's always, things always sort of meld together. As it is, when you have the day game following the night game, like if you're on the Cubs train, if you're riding it and you're watching every inning, like I have for the most part over the last 2 days, the night's cut. It was a late nighter last night. And then the day game today, you know, started after 2 o'clock. So you had a chance to sleep in or whatever, however you were consuming the Cubs game today. But they meld together because yesterday, all right, check me out here. Yesterday, The Cubs beat the A's 7-4. Today, again, 10-2. Seiya Suzuki. Oh, my God. Seiya Suzuki today. 5 RBIs, including 2 home runs along the way. Okay? There is a gentleman on the Sacramento A's, or whatever they are, the soon-to-be Vegas A's. But for now, I guess they are the Sactown A's. There is a gentleman on their team by the name of Brent Rooker. Brent Rooker homered yesterday as well. So check this out. Oh, Homer, today, I should say. So let me make this really easy, and then I'll get on with it. The Tuesday and the Wednesday games melding together. Yesterday, Seiya Suzuki hits a three-run homer in the top of the first, while Brent Rooker hit a two-run bomb in the bottom of the first for the Oakland A's. That was off of Justin Steele. We've got to figure out why he's giving up so many home runs. Today, Seiya Suzuki, three-run homer in the second. Brent Rooker, two-run homer in the third. Terry Brent Rooker, you can't hurt us. The win goes to Seiya Suzuki, and the Cubs end up sweeping the A's in Sacramento. And that does bring us to our friend Seiya Suzuki. He is an interesting case in Cubs free agent signing history because it has never felt like, there's never been a feeling of satisfaction at the end of a Seiya Suzuki season until you think about it or look back on it and you look at the numbers last year for Seiya Suzuki, and the numbers were pretty good. The numbers were pretty good, but if you watched Cubs baseball, it didn't feel that way, and there were moments where he was hot and extraordinarily hot, but there were also those pockets of, where you at? Where are you? And so while the numbers were big, it certainly wasn't clutch in a lot of cases, or it didn't feel, just talking to Chris Emma about that. We were, just before we came on in the hallway, he's down the hall doing WBBM, and we're talking, and it's amazing because there's a bunch of us out in the hallway and everybody's talking about Seiya Suzuki. And what does this mean? We do the, he's arrived, this is it, this is what we've all been expecting. The Seiya Suzuki people are like, yep, that's it. But it never quite is. I'm willing to like take what he did, has done. I mean, he said three home runs and just in the nick of time because he was just about to get cold before he became extraordinarily hot with the five RBI day today. But as we were huddled up, there's always this bit of, I would say, earned cynicism when it comes to talking about, say, a Suzuki and what he is or what he will be, or do we accept him for what he is at this point. I was talking about this like in regards to Coby White. Like, I think that's a bit of a parallel with the Bulls. High expectations for somebody like Coby White. Obviously, he's a first-round pick. But is he actually a star? Or is he just a guy who, like last year and then what he's been doing now, and we'll talk to Chuck about Coby White later, is he just getting extraordinarily hot and then he is what he is and it equals a good player? And maybe that's what Seiya Suzuki is as well. Yes, all of this based on a two-home-run day for Seiya Suzuki. Jameson Taillon in this one, good enough. He was good. In this day and age, six innings, two runs, allowed four hits, struck out seven. He walked three. He did give up a home run to Brent Rooker. But who's not going to give up a home run to Brent Rooker in this series? I did see Taillon get himself out of a bases loaded jam, so he was fine on the day for the Cubs. So that looked good. I also enjoyed, for the sake of, because this is blowout, but there were some early moments in this game. I'm sorry, but when the Cubs, like at the beginning of this game, it just, there was no way the Cubs were going to lose. It just had that feeling because, like, what do the A's care in Sacramento and all of that kind of stuff? But in early on in the game, there were some blown opportunities for the Cubs for sure. Nico Horner and Pete Crow Armstrong both had two out RBI hits in the fourth inning, and those were make goods from earlier in the game with those two guys. I think there were runners on first and second and nobody out, and those two guys popped out. So that was nice for those guys as well. Cubs win it by 8 runs. If you want to jump in here, we are here for you, Cubs fans. 312-644-6767 is the number. So some nice starts so far for the Cubs. We talked about last night a little bit as well, just because these games haven't really talked about these games and what's been going on in them, because again, they melded together. Last night, the Cubs with a 7-4 win over the A's. Justin Steele, 6 2/3, allowed 4 runs on 7 hits. He struck out 6, walked 1, and here's the only number that I circled when it comes to Justin Steele. He allowed 2 more home runs. That is 5 this year. 5 that he has given up so far this year. And that's not like Justin Steele. He allowed 12 home runs last year. 14 is the most he's given up in his career. So something is not quite right yet with Justin Steele. Not to the point where I'm worried, but it's worth noting. And it's worth noting what the fact that it has been, he's been giving up the gopher ball. So that's just something to keep an eye on with Justin Steele. I am being told that we do have Craig Counsell, fresh out of the update studio hopper, right to you. Cubs beat the A's 10-2. Craig Counsell after the game.
Well, we talked about Seiya's aggressiveness pregame, and we saw that again with the homers. Just how important is that from your perspective to have success at the plate for him?
Hitting in the middle of the lineup, he's a big part of our offense, so getting him off to a good start and getting him confident is this just bodes well for the rest of the season for sure. And he's in a good spot. You know, I think what we were talking about before the game of just ramping up the aggressiveness just a touch, he's seeing some positive results from that, and that's a great thing.
And kind of on top of that, I mean, the second homer going the opposite way with it, not trying to pull everything, just when he's looking confident beyond the aggressiveness, what stands out to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, he has the power to hit home runs everywhere, and that's what's fun to see. I mean, I think, it's kind of raw power. Say is probably number one on the team, and so just getting the ball in the air or wherever is a good thing for Seiya.
For the offense as a whole, can a series like this carry over in terms of even just building confidence or momentum?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think just getting off to a good start is obviously important. It was a good road trip, very good road trip, and we did a nice job offensively. I feel like everybody's done something good offensively, which is a good spot to be in through the first, I know 9 games, really 7 games here. So we take it back home with a nice feeling and a good flight.
With J-Mo, just the quality of his stuff, the swing and miss today, just what stood out to you?
Yeah, I think Tommy said 18 swing and miss, which, I think that's what's impressive. That's a really good sign for J-Mo getting that much swing and miss.
Craig, how much you would attribute to just great hitting or the pitching or the ballpark?
Yeah, maybe the second Seiya homer ballpark, but the rest of them probably home runs. We swung the bats well. I thought, Springs is a good starting pitcher. I thought we did a really nice job against, specifically their 1 and 2 guys, Springs and Severino. I thought we did a great job. Those guys are good starting pitchers, and, both had great first starts. So, I was very pleased with our offense and our approach this series.
Now that you've officially gotten through the road trip, what are you most looking forward to? Going home and reopening there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're just all looking forward to playing in Wrigley. It's so much fun. Our guys love it. They look forward to it. So just in getting back to Chicago, that's number one.
Cubs manager Craig Counsell right there. Yeah, the Cubs are off tomorrow, and then they will host San Diego Friday in the home opener right here on 670 The Score as the Cubs beat the A's 10-2. That's a good thing. That's a good thing today, and there are good things within. How relieving is it? What a relief it is that Kyle Tucker has hit 4 home runs already. And he hit 4 in 4 days, and he's got like 12 RBIs. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's like leading the league in RBIs, I think, right now. It was just based on the spring lull that he had and the expectations that obviously exist for him, and justifiably so, and all that, considering what they did give up. And I'm not doing the let's pay this man conversation tonight. Well, let's keep him hot. Let's see how this looks in the middle of the season, and then we'll start that puppy up again. But it's really, I said this about Dansby Swanson. Remember when the Cubs signed Dansby Swanson, and a big, obviously a big deal shortstop, And he was definitely the second or third most prized possession in that shortstop year. But he was on a tear to begin his Cubs career. Like, it got really good fast, and I remember being relieved for him because it's just so important when you're a free agent or that signs the big money deal with the team, or a guy like Kyle Tucker, who, oh, we've been hearing about this Tucker guy. What's he looks like he's not very good. He hasn't been doing anything in the spring, and just his timing looked off. And then the real games start, and he's just scalding the baseball. Finally, and 4 home runs in 4 days. He looks a lot like Kyle Tucker. One thing I am getting familiar with about Kyle Tucker, I've seen him play plenty in his career for Houston, and I guess I noticed this to some degree about him. What an expressionless person he is. You talk about a guy with a poker face, a guy that he just doesn't look like he's having any fun whatsoever. He looks like he's angry that he's playing baseball. It is amazing. Like, and I don't mean that in a good or a bad way. I'm just mean that in it's hilarious to watch. Like, because of all the swag and everything that exists these days in terms of the players, and Kyle Tucker's just like, what moves you, Kyle Tucker? I mean, it's great. Like, 4 home runs that just keep hitting the baseball. In the meantime, I'm going to wonder a little bit about Kyle Tucker and what actually moves the man. I was watching him, I guess it was after the game last night, was it? Did he homer? Yeah, he homered last night. Yeah. And he was on Marquee afterwards, and he's hitting the baseball all over the place in that little ballpark in Sacramento. Taylor McGregor is interviewing him, and she just kind of lobs it up there for him. What do you think about how this ballpark plays? And in an easy moment right there for Kyle Tucker to go, oh yeah, man, this place, it's playing like a ping pong ball out here. And he's just like, oh, it's a nice park. I'm like, oh man, this man cannot be moved. But we have what audio? We have Kyle Tucker? Oh, with Taylor McGregor. Okay. I don't know if you're talking to me on the air, if you're in my ear, I can't tell. But here's Kyle Tucker.
A little while ago, in the minor leagues. But, I mean, it is a nice ballpark. Obviously the fans have been, selling out this place the last couple of days. So, I don't mind it.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't mind it. I don't know. Maybe he just didn't understand the spirit of the question. Because I'm sure there was, of course, there's been a ton of talk from major league players when they arrive in Sacramento. I'm sure everybody had an opinion. So I think that's the question he was projecting on Taylor. He was projecting that it was a question on the inconvenience of the ballpark. And there's Kyle Tucker, the veteran, going, no big deal. It's all good, man. Other than when they would do the aerial view, it didn't feel that different from watching a typical A's game in the last 20 years, to be honest, because the Oakland Coliseum is one of the most cavernous places that you can go. I've been there for a Bears working for a Cubs game and for a Bears game. I talk about the old Oakland Coliseum, and it didn't help that when it's that cavernous that you didn't have fans coming in. So it was the weirdest thing, like, to be there for baseball. But for football, for some reason, I felt it a little bit more going there for football. But, yeah, that could be the interpretation of what Kyle Tucker was talking about. But I have definitely found him to be an interesting personality, or lack thereof. The other guy that I want to give a shout-out to here on the Cubs is, and look, I'm back to Dansby Swanson. We know this about Dansby Swanson. He's a damn good defensive player, like a really good gold glove winning shortstop. And he ended the game last night again, unassisted double play. He had that wild one where he chased the runner back to third base. The guy running at third rounded a little bit. Swanson makes the dive tag to end the game. So Swanee has had a few, not Wani, Swanee has had a few nice endings of games. So it's good to see it start to come together. Cubs are 5-4. Cubs are 5-4. That feels, quite frankly, if you were somebody who looked at the schedule for the Cubs at the beginning of the season, including the two bonus losses they took in Japan against the Dodgers, you probably had to think that the first 9 games, it's going to be something like that. and you take it. 5-4, if you are a Cubs fan, you take it. That's a pretty good spot right there. We're going to talk more about the Cubs coming up for sure, and coming up at 7 o'clock, we are going to talk about the Chicago Bulls with the one and only Chuck Swirsky. I am also told, I'm just being told things left and right tonight, I am now being told that the Chicago Bulls, Coby White, will be on with Marshall and Layla tomorrow at 1 p.m. So Coby White will be in the house. Well, I don't know if he's going to be in the house. I imagine that he will be on the telly, but that's pretty awesome. They could ask Coby White if he's a superstar. I'll ask Chuck later. We'll find out from Chuck at 7 o'clock. But we'll talk Bulls in a bit more baseball, and I do promise you I have plenty to say about the Chicago Bears, some of the key audio from the last couple of days at the owners' meetings, and yeah, we'll talk about it all here. And also you, 312-644-6767. I am Mark Grody. I'm here with you until 9 on The Score.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody.
Watch me flip these puppies.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Listen, it's a different regime. What happened last year was last year. We're moving on. We're moving past that. I haven't totally formulated what that presentation is going to look like quite yet. I tend to like to procrastinate just a little bit. That's where the best work tends to come out. So I'll figure that out over the weekend, though.
That's fancy Ben Johnson right there, the head coach of the Chicago Bears. I don't know why. That just came to my brain. He seems fancy. There's something about him. I mean, fancy in the good way. He's so fancy. He's slick. He's fancy. He knows more than the reporters, which is good. Which is really good. So that is the Bears head coach. Oh, man, the Bears are hot right now, man. We're in another Bears cycle. The owners' meetings are going on in Florida right now. So all sorts of people are talking for the Bears, and I'm going to go through some of the stuff that I found most significant. Right now, we're gonna hear from Ben Johnson and from
fancy
Ryan Poles.
Man.
That's right. He's fancy. Who was that? Is that Haw?
Yeah, that's Haw.
That's hilarious. The fact that you had a fancy cut ready. That's good. Buterbaugh. You're a beaut, man. You're on your game, buddy. That was some solid work right there.
Buterbaugh is all one name.
No. Well, no. I mean, because I do call you the beaut. So I would actually, you're the beaut ball.
That's stuck now. Like, everyone else calls me that, too, which is kind of funny.
Oh, the Butte?
Yeah, someone else said the Buttes or something like that.
The longer I'm here, the more influence I've had on nicknames for the producers or whomever. So that's really good to hear because Robbie the Tree, that's mine. I want us to keep track. I did come up with the tree for Robbie. So.
You got to come with a new one with Farangle because we've called him Baby T for a while.
Oh, no, I like Baby T is pretty good. And plus, that came from Gabe, and Gabe's my guy. So I got to give the nod to Gabe Ramirez on that one. Baby T's, but he doesn't like Baby T?
No, I think he likes it. He sticks with it.
Hey, Grody, what's up? That's my guy. That is absolutely Baby T. He is the goods. By the way, the Twins lead the White Sox 6-1. Bottom of the eighth. So we'll talk a little bit about the White Sox once that game goes final. So we talk about pitching Ninja, Bosser, Schriffen. It's all happening for the Chicago White Sox, who are getting twinned right now. They are down five. As for our Chicago Bears and the owners' meetings and the interesting things coming out of it, and I listened to every word of what Ben Johnson said and what Ryan Pohl said, and here's what interests me the most, probably in this order, and there's a lot, but it's for me, after listening to it, the most important thing still came down to Caleb Williams. And what are you going to do with this guy, Mr. Fancy? What are you going to do with that clay? Because it does feel like they have rolled him up. Like, you just made your Play-Doh thing, right? You made whatever it is you made, right? And then you're like, I'm done with it. I'm tired with it. I'm going to take it. I'm just going to roll it back up into a ball and shove it back into the container. That's what's going on with Caleb Williams, or at least that's what it feels like. And one of the things that it was suggested to Ben Johnson in regards to Caleb Williams, and I hated hearing this, like, the question was jarring to my ears, but it was a good question and a worthwhile question, justified question. And the words that were used were, it hurts me to even say it now. Are there bad habits that now have to be undone? God, that makes me sick to think about. Like, literally, I couldn't get through saying that. It pisses me off that this quarterback did not have the right people around him last year. My God. And now we have to ask this question of this new head coach. Do you have to undo the crap that this coaching staff put that quarterback through last year? Before I blow a gasket, let's play the audio.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any undoing, but there are some things that we're going to encourage that he looks to do a little bit differently. So, you know, he's been predominantly a shotgun quarterback for most of his high school and college career, and so he's very comfortable there. We're going to work to see the comfort level under center and how much of that applies. We had a lot of success where I was last, that going under center for the run game did translate and play action. Whether that works for us in Chicago, time will tell, right? But there's a lot of ways to skin a cat, and that's the beauty about this coaching staff, is we have a lot of different influences from a lot of different systems that we'll be able to bring together a good product.
How much do you think that just having someone who speaks the quarterback language, how much can that benefit Caleb as he goes through this process, just even from like the construction of the room to the coaching staff around him?
Yeah, I think you need to be able to see the game as a play caller through the lens of the quarterback, and vice versa. He needs to see it through the play caller as well. Why are we calling certain plays with the intent of the play? But for me, everything that I do really is to try to set it up within how he sees the game.
Yep, I mean, and that obviously sounds really smart at the end there from Ben Johnson. It's a message that he's been consistent with, that he will coach the game the way Caleb Williams sees the game. And yeah, it is good when you have what seems to be the right coach for Caleb Williams. I mean, we'll find out. But talking about that under center stuff, and Obviously, you want to have a hefty running game, one that can lead to play action, obviously, and more success in the passing game. So that's something that he mentions. It seems like every single time we talk to him, some form of that in terms of this is how we're going to make the run game go, and under center is going to be really important, and it's going to be really interesting to see how Caleb Williams adjusts to it, takes to it, and I'm glad Ben Johnson didn't say that they necessarily have to undo anything, because he knows. He's like me. He knows what a damn indictment that would be of his predecessor. Not that he cares, but what an indictment of his predecessor it would be, not to mention his predecessor, but the guy that was his counterpart when he was in Detroit, Ben Johnson, that would be Shane Waldron. What an indictment that is on Shane Waldron and Ryan Poles, because you had the wrong people around the quarterback that was drafted number one overall, that you moved everything off the table to bring this guy in, and you had the wrong people around him. But we attempt to move on. Here's another cut from Ben Johnson. There's a quarterback metric that we need to know about and keep an eye on and probably follow throughout the season. It's EPA, and you'll hear the Ben Johnson refer to it as, well, EPA, but it's expected points added is what it is. So when you hear that reference, I just wanted to preview it. So when you hear that, you know what the hell he is talking about. But this is Ben Johnson. Because remember, again, here's a little bit more before we play the cut. Remember when he, in his opening press conference, he talked about how it's not necessarily about forcing turnovers. It's about the quarterback and the quarterback success. And, well, take a listen to the cut here. Here it is.
You talked about how success in the modern NFL is quarterback-driven, and that's the driving force of success. What are the most important metrics to you to identify quarterback success?
So the way I understand it right now, from our analytics team, the EPA in the passing game is really one of the most critical factors in determining wins and losses right now. That's probably changed over the last 5 years or so. I would have said 5 years ago, turnovers, takeaways, that was number one. From what I understand now, that EPA for the passing game has now surpassed that. So whatever team has the higher passing game EPA at the end of the game, they generally win that game. It's over 80% of the time. So it's a huge stat, and that's where we look to how do we help inflate that number, higher completion percentage, more run after catch opportunities. That's not to say we're not going to take our shots down the field and look for big explosive plays, chunks, or touchdowns that way, but there's a lot of ways we can get that done.
As an extension of that, when you're trying to see the game through Caleb's eyes and him through yours, in the very earliest stages when the doors open for you guys to spend more time together, what do you focus on first? What are the ways that you guys start to build that?
Man, you go back to the basics, and so it's the fundamentals of the quarterback position. What's our footwork going to look like under center, from the shotgun? What are we calling the formations? What's the defensive identification going to look like? So that we're all speaking the same language. We got to get on the same page, because it'll be a little bit different for him than what he experienced last year. And if we can mesh together and start speaking the same language, that's when things will really start to take off.
Yep, and I do understand, too, that it's all words right now, and we are definitely early still in the honeymoon phase of Ben Johnson. But it's still, I mean, the relativity factor has not been erased off the chalkboard yet. Like, listening to Ben Johnson relative to Matt Eberflus, relative to many predecessors, I mean, this sound of knowing what you're talking about and actually giving us something that we have to think about, that's interesting to me. And I do like that Ben Johnson has that, because I think I've noticed this in sports, mostly in all sports, really. But let's talk football and baseball as it pertains to the advanced statistics and metrics and things like that. Almost every manager or head coach will always tell you, oh, yeah, we look at everything. We're very interested in the numbers and the metrics and what they're saying, except for things like, I suppose, field goals and things like that. A lot of coaches still right now are in that, like, I'll say I'm interested in it, but really I don't care that much about that. That's for the nerds, and that's for, you know, whatever. If I need to know, you guys will tell me. That's usually what it is. But they respect it. They understand that they have to respect it, and that there are players, and that there are people who write about it. There are people who talk about it. But trust me, most of them are just saying that. In the case of Ben Johnson, he really does have, you know, he really is into it. He probably has in some way. I wonder if he's got his own little concoction, his own formula, like the Cubs did back in the day. And I remember when, you know, of course, Joe Maddon comes in, but that was when the Cubs started to get on top of Theo Epstein specifically, on top of it with the advanced metrics guys, one of whom, by the way, was Tommy Hotovy. Tommy Hotovy back in the day, man. Tommy Hotovy, that's a good story. You know, the Tommy Hotovy story, now the pitching coach for the Cubs. Tommy Hotovy back in the day, man, he head down, bringing papers to people, walking through the club, you know, like that I'm busy, I've got, you know, stacks of papers in my hand. He's got his phone, he's showing people things, game planning. Like, he was a big part of all of that stuff. So I know how it kind of gets injected. And they, I guess my point is to say, is that they did have their own little, because Joe Maddon would even say it, that they had their own little, they would kind of look at us and wink and be like, we got our own little concoction on how we look at players. And Tommy Hotovy was a big part of that, and some of the other guys that were in that department. And now you have, and I know it's not as prevalent, or it's just not as prevalent in football in terms of it being part of the statistics line, being referenced by broadcasters. And it's still light, I think, in, you know, now in baseball. And, like, they don't hit you over the head with the advanced statistics and metrics, but I think that they are there for you when you need them. But my point is that Ben Johnson will use those, and I think that he will use them well. And I'm looking forward to not only seeing how he implements them, but talking to the players and seeing what they notice and what difference it makes, and if they like it, and if they care. And I would imagine, like, most of the players, like, there's usually, you know, a few guys in every clubhouse or an NFL locker room who do look at all of that stuff, who are well into it, who are very interested in it. I would still say the majority are not. And trust me, that's just from being in a lot of locker rooms, dressing rooms in the modern era. Okay, I'm not talking about 20 years ago. We are now, folks. We are absolutely now. We are going to talk more Bears coming up. We're going to hear more from Ben Johnson, and I've got the Ryan Poles angle coming up for you. So we'll do some more of that coming up. Chuck Swirsky at 7, and I do want to talk about a couple of things with the White Sox, including the game that is going on. They're going to lose this game, it looks like. It might be over by the time I get back. So we're going to talk a little bit about this White Sox game that they're about to lose, and what's going on with them. And I think I'm kind of on Triffin's side on the pitching ninja thing. Not that I don't like pitching ninja, but just on his side with this whole silliness that has occurred over the last 24 hours with John Triffin and Brian Bannister. And who is the gentleman that runs Pitching Ninja? I can't think of his name. I'll lay it all out for you when we come back from a break here. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody.
My God, what a happy day it is when I talk to Mark Grody and anybody else who's with him.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Baseball Twitter, I mean, this has become a real popular thing. A lot of guys turn to it just to, you know, experiment and try new things with their pitches.
Pitching Ninja is a real thing. It's become very popular, but if that's how you want to find some info, go for it.
I think
it won't be my source.
Yeah,
but.
Oh, man. John Triffin, White Sox broadcaster from last night, Cubs 7. Excuse me. That was the White Sox game last night. And John Triffin taking a shot there at Pitching Ninja, which apparently that's a big no-no. Apparently you are not, that is not something that you are allowed to do, because then so he takes that swipe at Pitching Ninja. Then They're going to keep it all straight because there's new developments here. Then on Twitter, White Sox senior pitching advisor Brian Bannister defended Pitching Ninja, essentially taking a shot at Schifrin's shot. And moreover, I think more importantly, the point that Bannister was trying to make was to support Pitching Ninja because he likes it and respects it. And Rob Friedman is the person that run. He is the Pitching Ninja. The Pitching Ninja is cool. And Rob wrote this today. For the record, John Schifrin apologized to me. He meant nothing by it other than he doesn't use Twitter/X any longer, and said he was a big fan, and he said it just came out awkwardly. And then John Schifrin, he apologized to him. That there's all sorts of stuff on social media about that, and so that certainly is confirmed. And I do believe that today then, during the broadcast of the White Sox game, which we'll talk about here in a second, he apologized again.
This opportunity to clarify something that I said on the broadcast last night. We were having a conversation about players who get tips or news off of things that they find on Twitter, which is now X. And I made a comment, and in no way was I intending to take a jab or a slight at Pitching Ninja, which is a great resource for people who can break down the art of pitching. So I went back, I watched the broadcast last night, and clearly it was not what I intended to say, and I apologized. I reached out to Rob privately. And he's the guy who runs Pitching Ninja. And we had a great conversation. He said, I understand. Yeah, there's no bad beef here or anything like that. I know what I intended to say was, because I'm not on Twitter anymore, Twitter and X is not a source for me. And I said that on the previous game broadcast that I deleted it and I'm not on Twitter anymore. So just wanted to clarify that. I am a big fan of Pitching Ninja. I think it's great for the game of baseball. Gets people involved in a very creative way. So no way was I trying to take a jab there.
Clarified, and as far as I take him at his word, clarified sounds like a pretty good defense to me, because it did seem weird, like, to take a shot. But weird is the only word that I would use. Not criminal. Not like he has to go through this whole. And I realize that John Schifrin is not exactly garnered the benefit of the doubt with White Sox fans, nor in the media, but you're not allowed to dislike Pitching Ninja. And I get it, if that's what he had actually meant, it would have come across as a little bit snarky in the tone and maybe even a little bit rude. But that's the reaction to it, that he's got to be put through the ringer. And Brian Bannister's feelings were hurt. I mean, because that's his buddy, and I don't know. That it seems odd to me. That's what he was guilty of. Like, if Hawk had done this, and again, I get it, he's John Schifrin, has not earned the benefit of the doubt. If Hawk had done something like that, we would have laughed and said, oh, there's Hawk just giving his opinion. We appreciate that. Love a play-by-play guy who actually gives his opinion in this day and age when most play-by-play people are scared to death to say anything, and justifiably so. So, like, I don't know where the crime was here. Like, he's got to be put through all of this. And the clarification was good, I think. I mean, that's fine, and he meant something else. But it's just wild to me that if it had been what we all thought it was, that no, mister, we don't get irreverent on television in this city. No, sir. 312-644-6767 is the number. By the way, the White Sox did lose to Minnesota Twins. 6-1, the final score. Oh, got, like, I was talking about Eugenio Suarez the other day and the Cubs killer that he is. Byron Buxton homered in the first inning of this game. 460-foot home run for Byron Buxton, who has been a pain in the White Sox ass for a
long time. Oh, no!
He done did it again. Harrison Bader also homered in this one for the Twins. Bader was more of a Cubs problem, really. Oh, Byron Buxton also with another RBI double to add to that. Good old Ty France with an RBI double. Brooks Baldwin, home run. He's been popping up in that HR category quite a bit so far this year for the White Sox, who lose it again. 6-1 was the final score. As far as the Sox on the mound, you're like, who's giving up all these bombs? Oh, man. Sean Burke did not get out of the jams that he did get out of in his first start this year. Sean Burke gave up two bombs in this one. 4 1/3, 6 runs, 7 hits. And, I mean, this ain't the Angels. But the Twins have not exactly gotten off to a roaring start themselves. But, yeah, Burke's young, all that kind of stuff, and we're not going to go off on Sean Burke. But I was a little worried watching that game, the first start, just kind of nervous moments, got out of trouble to his benefit, but clearly he did not get away with some of those pitches in this start. Let's see, who else gave up? No, he was the only one that gave up the home runs in this game. I have time. I got time for Kendall, because Kendall doesn't want to wait 5 minutes here. Kendall, you're on the score. What's going on, man?
Hey, Grody. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. I'm a big Sox fan, and, you know, I grew up listening to Hawk. The difference between Hawk and Schriffen is Hawk wouldn't have walked it back after he said it. And Schriffen clearly walked it back.
He did.
He knew what he said. He said that the pitching ninja, yeah, I wouldn't go there for my sources. And then but now all of a sudden it's a great resource. Well, which is it, John?
Well, I'm trying.
I'm
still trying to zero in on some of the minutiae of it. Was he serious, though? Like, was he actually in a spot? Is the reason that he was so complicit, or that he apologizes, because he actually realized that he confused people, as opposed to actually taking a shot at pitching ninja?
I mean, the way that I read it, and I try not to be like, look, I mean, I think I speak for a lot of Sox fans. I try not to be a jerk in life. We can't stand this guy.
Okay.
I mean, it's bad. And we, you know, and it just seems like it's, so maybe that's informing my perspective, the fact that I just don't really care for his style. But it seemed to me like that, it just seems phony to me. And that seemed like another example of it. And Hawk was a weirdo, no doubt, but he was a real weirdo. You know,
that's a good way to put it.
Thanks, Jordan. You take care.
Yeah, man. Thanks for the call, Kendall. Yeah, he was. And hey, I will take your word for it, Sox fans. You know, I mean, I have, and yes, I am one of those people who is able to watch White Sox games. So I'm, you know, and obviously last year that wasn't an issue. So I've seen my fair share of John Triffin, but I think the most important opinion comes from guys like Kendall that just called you, the White Sox fan, who are watching the majority of these games, sitting down in wherever you watch games and watching them on television. So it is interesting. And at some point in time, we'll see. Like, it's just like the players. You got to let's give him until Memorial Day before we make him apologize to pitch. You shall now apologize to pitching ninja for your sins. I don't know what really happened in this true crime, like what the intent was. I tend to, in this case, give Schriffen the benefit of the doubt. I understand what Kendall was saying. Like, his case is pretty good. Like, if we actually took this to court, he'd have some good background and a pretty good take. But I do think in this case, he's like, oh, man, I didn't mean to make it come across like that.
The nuns would have loved you.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. We've got Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Bulls. Joe Bagadonis. I don't know if we'll get Joe Bagadonis tonight. It's up to Chuck. Chuck is the one who either allows or doesn't allow Joe Bagadonis to come out. I know for sure that we'll talk to Chuck about the Chicago Bulls. That is coming up next on The Score.